Rural Focus.
Well, will a ban to lion sheep exports damage our trade across other commodities to key trade partners? Analyst with Thomas Elder Markets, Matt Dalgleish. Well, he's done some analysis on this. Matt does join me this morning. Good morning, mate.
Oh, g'day, Troy. Thanks for having me, mate.
Now, just how crucial is Australia's role in food security for our trading partners through live exports?
Relatively important, really, particularly when you look at a country like Kuwait. I mean, they take 65%. Of our live sheep. So they're a significant purchaser of our live sheep, and they've invested a lot of money over the years, in getting their systems right and up to standard that we expect, in terms of fulfilling all the SCAS requirements. So there's been a lot of money invested to make sure that their processing facilities and their holding facilities and the way they treat the animals are absolutely at top level of welfare standard. So, and they've done that on our request, really, because they do have a preference for our sheep. They're the best sheep in the world, mate.
They love our mutton, really, don't they, over that way?
The hog it too, yeah. So it's those export weathers that, kind of WA have got ample of, given the scenario where you guys are with the merino flock you've got there. So, that kind of hogget and true to mutton, they do prefer those older kind of more flavoursome types, and it suits their style of cooking, I think.
So what other exports could sort of be a bit damaged in this way as well there, Matt?
Yeah, well, just looking at Kuwait, so you've got the actual biggest export they take from Australia on any given year is actually in the cereal and vegetable kind of category. And if you look at it, if you break that down, it's predominantly wheat. So the total exports that Australia sends to Kuwait, wheat exports, is about 30 to 40% of our total exports. So yeah, there's a significant amount of wheat that goes there. And then second actually is the chilled and frozen and fresh meat product and edible offal, and live export comes in third in terms of the size of the flow. So that chilled and frozen meat's about 1/5 of the exports, and the live export's about 12% of the value of total exports.
It's not just Kuwait, it's some other countries over that way as well?
Yeah, that's right. So you've got the United Arab Emirates, UAE.
Yep.
So they're obviously second in terms of taking live sheep from Australia.
Yeah.
In terms of the volumes they take. And again, they've got, kind of the scenario with them is they take quite a bit of chemical as the primary kind of export from Australia. And most of that's aluminium oxide. That's kind of where they sit. They also take, Kuwait take second their meat and offal as well, similar to Kuwait. So about 12% of Australian exports consist of that fresh and frozen meat into the UAE. And the UAE is quite a big market. If you look at it in terms of overall export value, on any given year, it's about $3 billion in kind of money that comes back to Australia via those exports. So the UAE is a really big part of the export trade there.
Matt, is this sort of like what happened over in New Zealand with their ramifications that they had happened to them?
Do you mean when New Zealand kind of phased out themselves out of the export space?
There is a kind of, it does
go hand in hand. I know there's a lot of people that kind of expect that we can just switch between live export and the chilled and frozen product. Some of these countries, there's a high level of food security and they rely heavily on it. So when you sometimes move out of one market and don't offer something that they value and they want as a consumer in that market, and they take that, I guess, to heart, and they can make decisions around looking at alternatives. Like you said, what happened in New Zealand when, part of the reason I think we've got such good access into these areas of the Middle East, I think, is because we also are a key trading, a participant and partner with them in that live space. Move out of that live space, there are other participants that are eager to get access to these markets for chilled and fresh product as well, and potentially some of the other markets too. Depending on circumstance. So, you've got the likes of South Africa and the Horn of Africa, Sudan and Romania that are all happy to send live sheep into this area and would be probably happy to send other exports there as well.
We've already got a few problems, especially with China at the moment with, say, rock lobsters and wine. Hopefully it won't go down the same line. Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, that's part of the concern, really, that with these trade negotiations, often, there's a lot of kind of going and froing, and there's expectations that, if you're going to be a good, reliable trade partner, you need to be sensitive to the concerns and the needs of the group you're trading with, right? And we saw what happened with a handful of comments, I guess. You can upset a trading partner, and we saw what happened there with China with some not as desirable diplomatic outcomes. It is tricky when you're talking about, geopolitical instances where you've got such a huge trading partner as China, sometimes they are easy to upset. But, you know, depending upon what you say. But you know, we did see, like you said, with the beef space, the wine space, the lobster space, there was a bit of trade, I guess, punishment to a degree that occurred because China were unhappy with some of the things that we said politically. So you can see that these, when you upset a trading partner, they can make decisions that have impacts across a range of industries. And that's what I'm looking at with this analysis. I'm not suggesting that it is going to happen specifically, but I'm saying that there's a risk there that if we upset these trading partners because of our phase out of LiveX, we might have some other ramifications into markets we weren't expecting.
You will keep a close eye on that, mate, and do what you do best there at Thomas Elder Market. So thank you for that update. If you are wanting to know more, you can check it up on the Rural Focus Twitter page. Mate, you were in WA just last week. How'd you find the WA Farmers Forum there?
It was excellent. It was a very well-run forum up at the desk there at the university. Good numbers. I reckon there was, you know, about 120 or so people there listening in, and some fantastic speakers, very professionally run by the team at WA Farmers. So commend them on that. It was a great chance. I hadn't been into WA, obviously, since all the COVID shenanigans. So it was nice to get across and catch up with people and meet some new faces. And, like I said, a great kind of lineup of speakers, some really interesting stuff being discussed. Yeah, hopefully now that the borders are pretty freely flowing, I'll be able to get across to WA more frequently.
Mate, thanks for your time this morning. We'll keep a close eye on this and see what happens in the near future.
Thanks, Troy. Take care.